Welcome to The More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate and writer from Kensington, Maryland.
I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuzak, a political activist, a teacher from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I am Sarah Stewart Holland, the co-host of Pantsuit Politics podcast, and so excited to be a guest with you guys today.
We're excited to have you.
Indeed we are.
If you guys have not listened to Pantsuit Politics, it is probably one of my favorite political podcasts. I am not just saying that because Sarah's offered to co-host, which she is super nice to do this, but it really is very good. She has a co-host who is on the other side of the aisle. They work really well together. It's a great podcast, and it's a Patreon service, so you can order more. It's a great website. Highly recommend it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we try to do something similar. Our tagline is no shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance. So we try to see things in more than just a black and white way. That's our goal.
Well, we're going to steal that next week.
thank you. Thank you for being on our show. We will now.
Thank you.
We will now swipe
steal
your
best material. And
good night now.
Thank you. So it's good. I have been sick this week, so I have no idea what's been going on. I am just here for the root beer and the conversation. I will be honest. So, take it away, DJ. What's been going on?
Well, we can start with the government shutdown that lasted for all of about 8 hours. I had a friend of mine who works for the Department of Defense who arrived at work in the morning to begin the shutdown process and then had to stop 40 minutes in because the shutdown had been shut down.
Well, he clearly got to work earlier than the folks at OPM because a friend of mine posted a screenshot of the Office of Personnel Management webpage, which said, "Alert, we're not sure if you need to come to work today." And nobody updated that. That's also the same page that shows alerts for weather. So weather, shutdowns, it's all the same here in D.C.
Rebecca, why don't you give us some of the details about what exactly went down instead of the shutdown?
Well, like Greg, I slept through the shutdown itself because you know, they had funded the government up through midnight on the 8th and then had to come up with an extension on that, another continuing resolution that would keep the government funded. And there was some murmuring about Democrats shutting down the government again if they didn't get a vote on help for the Dreamers. There were all these questions about, you know, should we be including immigration in this? Should immigration be a standalone? And ultimately, the House passed something short term with the Freedom Caucus making a lot of noise about deficits. And the Senate came up with something that with Rand Paul making a lot of noise about deficits. And what they ultimately agreed on was a bill that will fund the government through March 23rd, I believe, will in fact increase the deficits. But there are some little sweeteners in it to make it more palatable to Democrats. They shored up to guaranteed funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program. There's money for community health centers, which are one of my favorite programs. There's some stuff for Medicare and the donut hole. So it has some good elements to it, but we're going to be back in the same position again in just over 4 weeks.
So I would call an 8-hour floor speech by Speaker Pelosi a little more than a murmur. I was pretty impressed by her staying power through that speech she gave in a desperate attempt to get Speaker Paul to make the same promise that Mitch McConnell made, which is that they would address DACA at some point. I was impressed by that. I think that's what she was trying to do, impress the people of her own party.
She did. You're right. I shouldn't have forgotten Speaker Pelosi. God, I'm dreaming. My fantasy world comes to the forefront. Leader Pelosi's speech. She stood for 8 hours in heels. Even Wendy Davis
had she tennis shoes
however
on.
However many
That's
hours.
Right.
Yeah, she was like, I wore tennis shoes, man.
I need tennis shoes. I'm Nancy Pelosi. Well, and yeah. The Rand Paul is my home state senator, so I'm a Democrat. I actually voted for Rand Paul. This is one of the reasons is because it actually almost got me kicked out of my local party when I posted about it on Facebook 6 months after the election. But I, this is one of my favorite stances that he takes, because I am increasingly concerned about the deficit. In full disclosure, it's really just because of an episode of Freakonomics that really freaked me out. But I think that he makes a point. I think just adding this on, depending on growth, is really hugely problematic for our country. Now, clearly, I don't want to take the hardcore scissors that he does, but I mean, he took a stand. My husband was super mad because he was like, whatever, he's such a hypocrite. He voted for the tax proposal. And I'm like, no, the vote for the tax proposal was when he's being a hypocrite. Now he's back to being himself.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Well, what's amazing is that for 8 years, there was a Republican Party that wouldn't let anything go without some sort of...
They would have laughed Obama out the room if he'd showed up with the spending bill.
Oh yeah. I know. You had to have, DJ, what's the word, where you can't have something without a cut?
Offsets.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, there were a ton of pay-fors. And you know, when the last time we were doing this, I think we talked about it last week, when they were doing all these short-term CRs, each one scraped a little more and cut spending a little bit more. Now they're lifting caps all over the place. They're going to explode military spending. It's wild. I've never seen small government people get so excited about big government before.
Well, this was just, we know what a compromise takes. Lots of money. That's the key to bipartisanship. So much money.
Well, you know what? We need earmarks back.
Mm-hmm.
Pork is the grease that runs those wheels.
Yeah. Republicans for years have accused Democrats of saying that they just want to throw money at problems and make them go away. Well, Republicans saw the Democrats as a problem, and they threw money at them and hoped they went away. That's essentially what happened here.
We're not going away, though. We'll come back and ask for more money, just like they say we will.
I'll tell you what, in my neck of the woods, I hear a lot of, well, I'm socially conservative, or I'm socially liberal, but I'm fiscally conservative, and I'm not going to listen to that anymore. I'm not going to let a single person get by with that comment again.
Well, I would say, however, this, though, that type of voter, Sarah, and the types, and we see a bunch of them here in Virginia and up and down the Atlantic coast, frankly, if they are serious, and they may not be, I don't know the people you talk to, but if they are serious, then they are the real swing voters now, because the Republicans have moved well away from limiting government and from limiting its size, scope, and cost. And the question for Democrats is, Democrats clearly need to build their coalition. Their coalition is not large enough to command a majority. That was obvious last year. The question now is, how are they looking to build a coalition? Are they going to continue what I can frankly consider the idiotic idea of going after the white working class voter who is never coming back to them because Trump validates their prejudices and speaks their language? Or are they going to finally acknowledge that, yes, people who are looking at to limit government size, scope, and cost are the swing voters, and that we as Democrats need to open the door to them, because they are more likely to listen to us on things like DACA and the Dreamers. They're more likely to listen to us on LGBTQ, et cetera, issues. They're more willing to listen to us on civil liberties and law enforcement misenforcing the law regarding people of color. It's those kinds of voters who are more likely to listen to us on that. We frankly need to stop ignoring them.
Well, also, it doesn't also, you know, what I always say on Pantsuit Politics is it doesn't have to be a purely politically pragmatic discussion. There is something to be said for not ballooning the deficit. Like,
I agree.
It's something we should be able to agree on. Like, we don't have to necessarily agree to how we control the deficit, how we reduce the debt. Obviously, there's a lot of debate there. But to say, hey, I think this is a bad idea should not be a revolutionary statement inside the Democratic Party or the Republican Party.
Agreed.
Well,
you know,
said.
It should be all about operationalizing our goals. And, you know, if one of the goals is deficit reduction, rock on, it's a good goal. But, you know, we shouldn't be doing it on the backs of poor people. There are other ways that we can operationalize this in a number of different ways. We just need to be willing to be creative and work together on it.
Unfortunately, we found the only way we work together is throwing money at it. So.
Right.
Well,
I'm not hopeful.
From this budget deal all the way back to the bank bailout a decade ago, when the two parties get together, it means more money will be spent and people who shouldn't get rich off it will get rich off it.
But like, to me, if you're trying to build the coalition of the Democratic Party, then do something big. Build some coalitions over with those deficit hawks. Go, Rand Paul is, there's some things that him and Democrats can agree on. Like, there's some deals to be made here with criminal justice reform with that guy and some deficit spending, like military, dialing back military presences in places that we've had war authorization for 16 years. Like, there's some coalition building available to us here.
There is indeed.
Yeah.
Sure, but I can't see any bill where scaling back military funding would ever be an option with the.
That's not the issue, though, Greg. It's
no, I mean the current GOP thinks we hate the military because we don't want a giant freaking parade.
I don't know. I think you could. I'm not kidding you. Like Rand Paul would go for that. Yeah. Like he would talk to you about that. He really would.
And Greg, the issue. Yeah, it's.
Oh,
and Greg,
I know he would.
It's not about getting. It's and this is the thing that drives me nuts. Among the many things that drive me nuts is people who listen.
I was going to say, this is the only thing that drives you nuts?
This is one of the many
things. This is the only thing I find
that
hard to believe.
Is that there's this focus on, oh, well, it's not going to pass, so we're not going to push it. No, that's silly. You put your priorities out there, and if they get shot down, you use the fact that they got shot down against your opponents come election time. You don't just throw stuff up that you think may actually get passed. You throw stuff up for the purpose of moving forward debate, of showing the American people where the division lies, and the fact that the other side is taking an unpopular position. That's okay, even if you don't get anything enacted. It helps you build political capital.
Yeah, but the problem is the other side controls what goes to the floor right now. So they're not going to throw something up that makes them look bad. That's why they need commitments, just the most basic commitments to bring it to debate for Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan.
Well, then don't bring it to Congress. Bring it to the American people. And then let's see what happens in November. I mean, the point is, you know, Andrew Coyne is a Canadian opinion columnist, and he has a very good line about what politics is all about. He says, you're in the persuasion business. Persuade. Right? And the Democrats need to spend more time persuading, because right now they're basically spending time trying to see whatever leverage they have and use it to maneuver. It's everything is transactional for them. They need to spend more time persuading people. They're not doing that right now.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have the tweeter in chief to get those persuasion points out there so easily.
Yeah, you got to get on Ted Lieu's Twitter or Adam Schiff's Twitter.
Yeah.
they don't have nearly the reach.
I would have to say the president probably helps Democrats more than he hurts them whenever he gets in front of Twitter or microphone. Particularly this weekend when he decided to wish well a staff secretary who left because of accusations I think are pretty well founded, that he beat the hell out of one of his ex-wives and scared the hell out of one of the other ones.
Two of his ex-wives.
Yeah, I was going to say, you call it accusations. I call it photos.
Well, yes.
The images of a woman with a black eye are pretty hard to refute.
I don't dispute that. As I said, I have good reason to believe the accusations that he beat the hell out of one ex-wife and scared the hell out of the other one. But for whatever reason, Donald Trump seems to think that unless someone has been convicted in a court of law, that they should just be able to go on doing whatever the hell they're doing. And the question I will now throw out to all of you is, what does this say not just about Donald Trump, but also about his chief of staff, John Kelly, who seemed to have the same political blind spot that his boss did?
You guys go, please. I'd like to hear from y'all first.
Well, the due process.
then I'll do some mansplaining. How's that?
By all means, that always goes so well for you too, Greg.
I know, sorry.
The due process stuff wears me out. You do not have a due process right to keep your job. Due process is when you remove someone's liberty. This idea that like we need to have full due process rights for a man who might like be kicked off the Today Show really wears me out. Really wears me out. That's not what it means. That's not what it's for. If you beat your wife, if there's credible evidence you beat your wife and you get fired for it, like you don't get to go to the Supreme Court and make sure you're being fairly charged. Like I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that.
At will employment.
At will employment. Which is sort of the problem with the whole sexual harassment Me Too moment anyway, right? Women have been suffering under the burden of this at-will employment thing for so long. But because, it's actually, things are coming to bear, then we all need to be super careful all of a sudden because Donald Trump has some concerns. Please.
Well, and what this says to me about Donald Trump, about John Kelly, about this whole ethos of the what I'm hoping are the last gasps of hardcore white supremacists, is that they don't actually believe it's a crime if it's white on white.
Hmm.
If a brown-skinned person had harmed a woman, they would certainly consider it a crime. If a brown-skinned person had harmed a white man, they would certainly consider it a crime. But a white man harming a white woman doesn't rise to the same level. They give the benefit of the doubt to white men in a way that they don't to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe white men don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Just maybe.
This one sure didn't.
Certainly not this one, with the pictures of his wife. And she's all over TV verifying what happened. There are old blog posts she's written describing her marriage to him. This is not something that's, you know, been cooked up out of nowhere this week. This is a long story.
Well, that's what I don't understand. If they certainly seem to have known about it for so long. I think that's disturbing on a totally different other level, that they knew about it, that they didn't do anything, that they hired this man, that he wasn't getting security clearance. They knew he wasn't. I mean, I have to question why all of a sudden this story came up, although I got a theory and it rhymes with Blavanka. So
try closer. It rhymes with, let's say, mope mix. No, wait, that gives it away too much. Lope lips closer.
Wait, you think she leaked a story? Why was her own boyfriend?
Yeah, why would she leak the story?
No, she didn't leak the story. But his security clearance was up January 16th. Mm. He was up. He had an interim security clearance. Up until then, he was only good for 1 year, and he was no longer supposed to be seeing anything. They gave him a pass. Like, okay, you're good until we will let you. Okay, he wasn't supposed to be there.
I think Rob Portman was just her. I think she's trying to get rid of John Kelly.
That could
be
too.
And I think this is her way.
But then why would she write? That's a whole nother thing. The problem is there was a White House spokesman on making the rounds on the news shows this morning. And he was like, you know, he was a Rhodes Scholar. He was this really good guy. He was our friend.
So what?
Clinton, and they had no problem coming after him.
I mean, you know, and they were talking like, oh, we just couldn't believe, you know, when this happens. And then he was on one of the NBC shows going, you know, you talk about like Matt Lauer. He was your friend, wasn't he? And they were like, whoa, we're not talking about Matt Lauer here. And they're like, no, but you understand. We were just shocked. We couldn't believe this happened.
Okay, and that's, listen, and I will give some grace. If that's, look, people are complex. And he didn't go around beating his coworkers. That's fine. I understand that you're shocked. Right. Once you understand the reality of this man's domestic abuse, then you don't go around defending him, not speaking out against domestic violence, not making it clear where you stand. Mike Pence always does. Mike Pence always the ones that follows the rule wherever he's around the globe being like, well, clearly this is unacceptable, even though Donald Trump will never say anything. And I heard one of his staffers say, oh, well, it's because he's had false accusations before. Really? Which ones? Which ones have been false?
Yeah, which ones?
I don't remember any fault. I remember you on videotape. I remember all kinds of
Sarah, forgive the interruption, Sarah, but remember, he now says that videotape was faked.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He calls the videotape fake news. But even Kellyanne Conway was on television this morning saying, well, Rob Porter will never beat Hope Hicks because Hope Hicks is a strong woman.
Oh, my God.
The fault of Porter's ex-wives.
Remember, the brothers did that with the sexual harassment. They basically said, no one would ever do that to Ivanka, and she would quit anyway. Do you not remember that? Oh, yeah, that's their thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, no, there's
it's basically,
there's so much
if you do it, you deserve
Oy
it.
Over they, this White Maria. House.
And that's the central theme, right? It's the, she's too ugly for me to sexually harass. Well, she's too pretty, no one would go after her. Or she's too strong, no one would beat her. I mean, it is... Such a
because
twisted.
They don't believe men are criminals.
No, and they don't value women except their own women, and only because what they can offer to them. Like, come on, Hope Hicks, honey, they would throw you under the bus so fast if it really came down to it. Like, I don't. It's so upsetting to see someone in such a position of power who does not value women at all. It never stops being upsetting, no matter how outlandish and ridiculous. Like, it never stops hurting. It never stops being like, I can't.
It never stops being, yeah.
Outrageous. It's so, it just, you know, I use the term righteous fury on my show. And, like, that's just, I feel that every time. I wish I would get numb to it. I wish I could just roll my eyes at him. But it is so infuriating every time. I have family members who are victims of domestic violence, and this is just disgusting.
Oh, it's not the worst part is that it is once again setting the country up for this is the normal. If this is what's going on in the White House, if this is the prevailing attitude of our leaders, okay. This is the bullshit of it all. Why are not our leaders just completely over the moon over this? Like, no, not at all. Why are we not having investigations, panels, like brouhahas immediately so that our, you know, young women, why are my daughters not right now seeing our leader saying, you know, this is not acceptable in any level and I can feel safe anywhere? That's for me, you know, well, there's lots of things that piss
me
off about this.
I think the hard reality, though, is that as much as I wish that he was making it so, before he said these outlandish things and tried to make Me Too about false accusations, feminism was already a partisan issue. If you poll Republican women, it's like 70% believe that women are already equal and would never identify themselves as, I don't know if it's that high, but it's a very, like, it's already a partisan issue. If you ask certain women, I've had conversations with women on my own personal Facebook feed where they're like, well, everything, we're treated fine. There's nothing wrong. Women aren't treated unfairly. Women don't have any sort of structural discrimination or anything like that. I mean, that's already, when we talk about the sides of the aisle viewing the world differently, that's already the case before you started mouthing off about this. Unfortunately.
No, I totally, yeah, I agree that there are entire segments of women, mainly white women, who don't see structural inequality and don't see the problems that, you know, the intersectional issues that we talk about a lot. And
I should say, not my co-host. She is hardcore Me Too. Just want to clarify that.
Oh, no,
that
yeah. I mean, even no,
she's cool.
From the commentator, I don't know what network she's on now. She was talking in favor of Me Too and believing women and not giving Porter a pass just because of who he is or who he's dating or where he works. You know, there are a lot of women who do understand it, who have their eyes wide open to it, but it's discouraging to see women like Kellyanne Conway going out and blaming victims and not willing to look outside of their own safe space to see what else there might be in the world.
Well, if Steve Bannon is to be believed,
oh, Lord,
then we are headed for a sea change in this sort of viewpoint or this differing viewpoint. Mr. Bannon seems convinced that the Me Too movement will not only equal the Tea Party of old, but actually surpass it in terms of long-term political influence.
I can say is whoever in the anti-patriarchy anarchist army squealed to Steve Bannon about our plans and let him in on it, you're in trouble at our next meeting.
I mean, did he say anti-patriarchy like it's a bad thing? Like anti-patriarchy is supposed to be like, is he branding it as if it's a bad thing? I'm really confused by his sort of hyperbole. Like I don't really get the emotional branding of anti-patriarchy. Be scared. Patriarchy's a bad thing, dude. Like, what's wrong?
Because Bannon is, and I'm offering this explanation because I used to know people like this when I was a Republican. He's one of those people who sort of takes the bad evil words and tries to ameliorate them and make them nice. So sort of the idea of treating insults as a badge of honor. So, you know, he's one of the kind of people who would stick out and say, yes, I support the patriarchy because, and he'll come up with things that are wonderful about America that really have nothing to do with the patriarchy and slap patriarchy as a label on it.
Yeah.
So as an attempt to ameliorate the bad word. So that's, I think, what he is doing.
He's one of those, like, a third turning or whatever it's called, people. What's that called? He thinks it's like the
fourth turn.
Yeah, like turn. The all those. I mean, he's now decided this B2 movement is a part of this disruption of the system that he believes is going to happen. It sounds like he swept that into his worldview.
Probably. That's probably what he's doing. And truth be told,
well, I mean, what he's doing is trying to scare men to go out to the polls in November because he's afraid that the ballbusters are going to come steal their weenies.
Well,
that's funny.
And I'm not saying that we're not going to do that, but again, whoever told Steve Bannon about the plan, don't do that again.
The deeper question, though, is from the perspective of an analyst, is Steve Bannon right? Is this something that will lead to a major political and cultural realignment? And will it be part of the new consensus that is, I think, at present still being built, which is why we don't know what the hell it is? Will this be part of the new consensus, and will it in fact make politics in the 2020s very different from where it is now?
I hope so.
I've talked about this before. I think it's happening bottom up. It's not going to be a top down process. We thought we were going to get it with Hillary, and we didn't. So now we're doing it
Tea Party way,
from the bottom of the pyramid. Yeah, the Tea Party way, from the bottom of the pyramid. We're doing it in our workplaces. We're doing it in our houses of worship. We're doing it in our communities. And we see these very top-level examples of men being taken down. I just saw a headline about what the sale of the Weinstein Company needs to look like, and it should pay restitution to people he harmed, and Steve Wynn losing his job. Yes, we're seeing all that. But what's more important is the fact that Joe Cubicle Worker is reading these headlines and thinking, oh, so I can't say to Jill Cubicle Worker in the next cubicle, nice tits. That's what's changing, is that the rank and file of us as citizens are going to have attitudinal changes. So that's what I'm hopeful for. Sure, I'd love to see larger systemic change and policy change. I'm never hopeful for that.
Well said.
I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. You guys can...
Well said.
You can either... Can you applaud
Everyone
something?
Take a drink.
Fill the silence.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
Speaking of, you have got to be kidding me, the president informed the Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee that he will not be releasing their memo after saying he would, and then he took to Twitter to blame them for it, for writing what he called a memo that was too long and too political.
Oh, you've got to be kidding
me. So if it's short, if it was only 4 pages, it would have been okay? How many pages was it?
Yeah, with some graphics and his name in every paragraph. No, I think what we need is a sound effect of a chicken. You know, I think he's chicken.
It's just every time you think, like, surely he wouldn't do that. Surely he wouldn't be so transparent. But yeah, I don't know why. Again, I don't know why I'm ever surprised.
You know, it must have used words he didn't understand or something like that. I don't know.
This is just, on some level, this is just typical. This is typical Trump. He gets what he wants, and he doesn't let anybody else get what they want. And really, on some level, I mean, I want to say on some level, Democrats shouldn't keep falling for it. But there are certain things that you really, you know, you have to go by the rules. And if someone's willing to screw with the rules this badly, there is very little you can do except, you know, market. My parents used to say, offer it up. We were Catholics, so we, you know, Mother Mary was quite frequent in our lives, and we'd just say, offer it up to me.
Yeah.
Offer it up to Mother Mary. And this is not quite offering up, but it's something we just write down, we take note of, and we make sure the American people are aware. Oh, by the way, he was quite willing to allow a memo that mm-hmm. said essentially nothing but raise a bunch of distractions, but a memo that would actually refute him, he wouldn't let you see because he's afraid of you knowing the truth. Example number 6,402 or something.
Yeah. You're keeping an official count, DJ?
Yeah, somewhere in the back. I'm trying to make a list of all
like
these
the, like whatever the Trump lies the counting is. Yeah, because he's up to about 6,422 lies too. I think he's issuing one a minute now.
Now, supposedly the White House has said that they've given the memo back to the FBI to scrub, and supposedly they will retake a look at it if the FBI, you know, takes out anything that they object to.
I want Peter Strzok to look at the memo. Let him decide what stays and what goes. I trust that guy.
But right. But here's the shenanigans part about that. The FBI objected to so much about the Republican memo mm-hmm. that they didn't even bother to look at the first Republican memo. You know, why wouldn't have Trump done that in the first place for that one? So he's like, oh, well, obviously they were so upset about that first memo. Maybe I should have him look at this one. And he doesn't even trust the FBI. I mean, remember, they're all crooks and scammers and people who are out to get him. I mean, what if they just turn around?
Right. He's convinced that the ghost of J. Edgar Hoover is out there taunting him and harassing him.
Yeah.
I believe they are also a vital component along with the anti-patriarchy movement in the fourth turning, according to Steve Bannon.
Oh, yeah. Well,
they're in good company with all of us.
Because J. Edgar Hoover was a cross-dresser. So, you know.
Me too, J. Edgar.
J. Edgar is not ever welcome in my anti-patriarchy movement. I just want to be clear on that. Not welcome.
And if this fourth turning leads to an American government that actually stands up for democracy abroad and stands up to tyrants like Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, where can I find the frickin' turnstile? Just as an aside, this part of it is that it is increasingly clear that they're not even talking to us listening to us. They're not even talking to us. I mean, I saw something on Politico this afternoon where David Nunes, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes. See, I'm terrible with first names. It's not just you, Sarah. But he has his own news website called the California Republican, where people can get heavily slanted news. I have a friend, an old friend of mine from the Republican Party, Sean Kenny, who created a website called the Republican Standard, which was so bad and so utterly biased that there are conservatives who will simply avoid it because of this strange behavior. Strange behavior and strange twisting of context all throughout the campaign last year in a desperate attempt to get Ed Gillespie elected governor. It failed miserably, by the way. That was delicious to watch and to be a part of.
I think one of the most disturbing parts of all of that is that I don't believe that Donald Trump, and I don't believe a lot of Republicans, but particularly Donald Trump, believes that he represents all Americans. He is solely concerned with his base, and that's very upsetting.
No, and I remember when John Bolton said that about George W. Bush, that he was only responsible to those
who voted for him.
And so Donald Trump, he believes he's vaguely committed to his base, but he's mostly committed to the people that he saw at Davos. He's mostly committed to the people he sees at Mar-a-Lago. He is there for the capital class. Mm-hmm. He's not interested in labor at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's serving the interests of people who are sheer profiteers and none of the rest of us.
He does like it when he's in an arena and they cheer for him. He digs that. He likes that part.
Yeah, but not enough to make the issues of wage inequality central.
No, he wants...
Like, he likes it when they cheer for him, but he doesn't actually care if they ever get a raise.
Because that's not... Because he has people telling him, people like Steve Miller mm-hmm. telling him, that the way to help white workers get higher wages is to kick out
immigrants.
Is to kick every immigrant totally. Out of the country. That's what they're telling him. They are telling him to use. They're essentially telling him to use racialist policy to address economic problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Dow Jones plummets.
Yeah. Well, they see high. The Dow sees higher interest rates coming. Everybody sees higher interest rates.
Dow's not wrong.
It's freaking obvious. I mean, the head of the OMB admitted it over the weekend. He said, "Yeah, we're going to see higher interest rates." You know, we're going to be...
Well, we were always going to see higher interest rates. That's the thing. It's not like higher interest rates are some sort of shocking development. There was no place for interest rates to go but higher.
But and that is true.
Yep.
But if in addition to higher interest rates, you have increasing frequency of trillion-dollar deficits, then you are eventually going to come to the situation where debt service is going to be at $1 trillion or higher. And when that happens, mark the tape. I may have made this prediction before, but I'm certainly going to make it now.
Oh, no.
When,
not your predictions.
When you see trillion-dollar debt service, and we're not there yet, but we will be. When you see that, give it a year or two, and whoever is in charge of the American government will essentially be forced to go to the IMF for a bailout.
That's a scary thought. See, Rand Paul's not as crazy as we all think he is. I'm just saying.
Again, it's how you operationalize it. His operationalizing is the crazy part. His base theory is sound.
Call back to Rand Paul.
Neighbors, just
saying. Just
the worst neighbors.
Terrible neighbors. Well, yes. I can't actually think of a segue, so I'm just going to jump. Among the many things that Trump wants these days is a military parade going through D.C., to aggrandize himself, et cetera, et cetera. And I know I introduced the topic, but I'm also going to throw in the context. I try to explain to people who insist that he's only doing this because he saw the French military parade on Bastille Day. So they're essentially saying, oh, he's just doing what the French want. And I'm trying to explain to them that that is not true at all. Donald Trump wants a military parade to, as I said, to aggrandize himself. They're even talking about having the parade go past one of his Trump properties in the Capitol.
Well, that's because it's on Pennsylvania Avenue and on the parade route from the inauguration. That makes logical sense from a geographic standpoint.
Right. But the French do the parade really as a favor to their soldiers so that they can pretend to be Germans for a day. There's a very complete difference between the two. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Well, the thing about the parade, a friend of mine is a military wife, and she started texting me the night this came out. She's like, you have no idea. Everyone on the military boards is furious about this. They don't want to take time to drill. They don't want to fly to D.C. on what should be a weekend off. And they certainly don't want to pay for new uniform elements or uniform repairs, because that's an out-of-pocket cost, to come do some dumb parade that doesn't serve a purpose. So the rank-and-file military are looking at this as a hassle and an expense.
That's what I said on our podcast. I said, look, here's my nuanced take. If the rank and file feel like we need this, like I'm assuming we got their email addresses, let's poll the crowd. If they want it, fine. I'm willing to pay for it. If they feel like they need it and they need a presence in America and they need to have a parade to put the military, the men and women of the actual military in the forefront, I'm cool with it. But if they don't want it, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, and the other thing is, if Trump wants to see a military parade, he can go to 8th and I to the Marine Corps barracks in Southeast D.C., and they do sunset maneuvers every single night in the summer. It's actually supposedly quite moving and quite beautiful. He could go there, clap his heart out, and it would be a heck of a lot cheaper than shutting down D.C. for a day and rolling tanks down Pennsylvania Avenue and tearing it up.
I'm sorry. It comes down to this. Putin gets a military parade every, what, May Day? Kim Jong, he gets a military parade every time. What he
every time he passes gas, pretty much.
Right. Every time he farts, Kim Jong Un. Every tin pot dictator gets a military parade every time one of their sons turns 14. You know, it's like that, and he's thinking, hey, I'm a guy with a nuclear weapon arsenal. How come I don't have a parade? Hey. And he's sitting there in his office with dinosaurs and missiles. And he goes, hey, what should I do? And Ivanka goes, you should have a parade.
Yes, Daddy. Like, yeah, good parade.
Yeah.
Right after you fire John Kelly.
You'll feel strong. You'll feel like a man. Nobody will remember that video of your hair.
I mean, it's always about him. Always about him. Always about him.
We promise we weren't going to talk about that video of his hair because
it's impossible not to talk about the video of his hair.
Well, let's not. All right, moving on.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned, I think somebody mentioned Trump clapping. Trump apparently does not like the fact when other people don't clap for him. Earlier this week in Cincinnati, and I got to be honest, this is a standard issue problem with this president. What happened on Monday and Tuesday seems like a lifetime ago, and we never remember it. And this is another example in that the president was in Cincinnati and essentially sort of offhand positing the notion that people who don't give him a standing ovation are in fact committing treason. I would previously not been aware that choosing to sit down and keep your hands to yourself is treason. Of course, then again,
As part, we're talking about Donald Trump.
As part of the earlier Me Too discussion, obviously the president does not really value people who keep their hands to themselves. And that includes this. I just have to say, and I'll let Greg start this conversation. What does it say when a president is, frankly, so insecure that he wants to throw the T word at people who just refuse to clap for him?
So it says he's crazy, but I'll throw that out right there. But it's a little more than that. He does this kind of free thought kind of thing when he talks, because what started out as a simple question is, what did you think about people not standing or clapping for you? He goes, well, you know, it's funny because I was talking about good things for the country, and I didn't understand that. But it was me. They weren't good things that I was saying. So in a sense, they weren't standing when I was saying the good things for the country. So that's treason, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard because they weren't standing because he was saying jobs for African Americans were at their all-time low in 20 years, which we've talked about before. That's technically true. It is true. That is right there. Did he have anything to do with it? No. It's the fact that he was saying it and he had nothing to do with it. And this is goes on every year at every speech. Is that un-American? No, not really. Is it treasonous? Definitely not. But for some reason, he thought if you don't stand when you hear good news or something like that, then it's in your un-American and it's treasonous. He's insane if that's his reasoning. Yeah.
He's not insane. He doesn't understand what treason means.
Okay.
It's just that simple. He actually doesn't understand what the word means.
I looked it up. It's just that simple.
He definitely doesn't understand what it means.
The enemy in a time of war. So not clapping doesn't qualify on any grounds.
And that doesn't even come close. The fact is, doesn't even come close.
That not clapping is actually protected speech. Like, sitting silent and polite is protected speech under the First Amendment. You can't cart someone away from that.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to disagree because he has gone to the bigliest universities and colleges. I'm sure his vocabulary is quite largely.
He has the best words.
How could he not know? So, what treason is. I'm sure
well,
he
I mean,
knows.
Most people don't know what treason is. That word gets tossed around a lot, and it's not accurate. I mean, unless you are basically aiding the government of Afghanistan at this point, or the opposition in Afghanistan, you are not committing treason. It's almost impossible to do.
I screamed at my 8-year-old when she didn't eat her lima beans this afternoon for dinner. Excuse me. I screamed.
You shouldn't even make her eat lima beans. Lima beans are disgusting.
I said, "Are you trying to commit treason? If you do not eat your lima beans, that's treason." And yeah. I'm pretty sure both Trump and I are right.
Yeah.
I'm Kevin Kelton, joining the gang to welcome a new sponsor to the More Perfect Union podcast, a fellow podcast named Deep Dish on Global Affairs from the Chicago Council on Global Affairs.
So wait, it's called Deep Dish and it's the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and we're not supposed to talk about pizza?
Sounds like something you could really sink your teeth into.
Sink your teeth into, because if you enjoy the MPU podcast, you should sink your teeth into Deep Dish. It's a weekly podcast. It goes beyond the headlines on critical global issues.
That's right. And each week, Deep Dish serves up fresh guests to help you digest the news of the world. It's had a NATO ambassador explain Russian aggression.
It's had a Navy admiral charting competition in the South China Sea. White House economists have broken down NAFTA negotiations.
And a Korea expert analyzed nuclear threats from North Korea. So if you're interested in all that stuff, and God knows we are, subscribe to Deep Dish on Global Affairs to have the hottest intel delivered straight to you.
Brought to you by HelloFresh. Edit that out, Kevin. Don't insult the sponsors. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have said that.
They're back with us next week.
Hey, I actually use HelloFresh. It's pretty good.
I love meal good. Services. Anybody who sends me food, I'm all for it. All right. Well, let's talk about the Olympics, guys, because Speaking of people standing or not standing and clapping, Mike Pence decided not to clap for the joint Korean team at the opening ceremonies.
Really?
How do we all feel about that? Yeah, he just sat there.
Frankly, I wouldn't have either. I'm not gonna stand for anything that I'm not gonna stand for a bunch of North Korean athletes who are looking around saying, "Please, can we figure out a way that we can defect?" That's really all that I'm sorry that for the most part that it's either find some way to defect or I hope to God I actually perform well so that my grandkids or my grandparents don't get executed. I'm all for not standing for tyrannical regimes. Now Pence didn't stand for anybody outside the United States. That was
because he's a dick.
Stupid.
Yeah, like did his knees hurt? Does he have a good excuse? Like, is his back giving the trouble?
Not standing for North Korean athletes, not standing for Communist Chinese athletes, not standing for athletes who you are quite certain may very well be coerced into attending in the first place. I'm okay with that.
So I think that since the Olympics is a lot, I've lost my shiny eyes about the Olympics. I just think that there are so many problems, especially in the wake of the Larry Nassar trial. And I have trouble getting on board with the, like, we're all one, moving things forward. But if I'm willing to call some of that back from the deepest part of my heart, if it is in any way, shape, or form moving the conversation between North Korea and South Korea together, so I certainly would have stood and clapped for anything that moves that conversation towards peace or towards cooperation in any scenario.
Yeah, I have to agree.
No matter how skeptical I am of the Olympics.
I think we have to be careful about that, frankly. And this is part of the problem that we're have that this just gets into the larger North Korea problem, is that this is, like, as we talked about on an earlier episode, this is a regime that does not just arrest dissidents. They arrest dissidents' parents and grandparents. They arrest dissidents' children and grandchildren. It is a horrifying tyrannical regime that only exists because their colonial masters in Beijing think they can use them against us.
But no one is clapping because they like North Korea, right? I mean, everyone understands that. Everyone knows it's a horrible regime.
I'm not sure most people do.
I agree with Sarah.
I think there are large swaths of Americans and other places who just look and think it's just, and they're the blame America first crowd, and they assume that if America is in an argument with somebody, that it must be our fault.
I hang out with a lot of liberal people. I don't hear anybody saying that about North Korea. I saw this when
Reagan took the fight to the Soviets in the 1980s. I saw this when George W. Bush liberated Iraq from Saddam Hussein in the aughts. There are a lot of people out there who, frankly, have a blind spot when it comes to tyrants. And I certainly don't mind avoiding military conflict because there are very good reasons and practical reasons to avoid it. But I do not like anything that gives Kim Jong-un, or frankly his Communist Chinese masters, any credibility whatsoever. They have hurt far too many of their own people to get any legitimacy from me.
I agree with you completely.
And not to quote Dr. Phil, but like, go ahead.
I agree with both y'all, but you got to give some credit when some piece is trying. You got to give, and we're not clapping for the country. We're clapping for that there is a peaceable handshake extended, you know.
The question, Greg, is peace for whom? The question is peace for whom? I guarantee you it's not anything even remotely resembling peace for the people who are trapped in Northern
Korea.
But
it's a start.
I wouldn't even use the word peace. I would use the word progress. And the thing about it is, you know, I understand what you're saying. I totally disagree with you about North Korea. I think that young guy that came over practically dead, his parents were at the State of the Union, they talked about the guy with the crutches. I think Americans are very well versed in the incredible, awful reality of the North Korean regime. However, you know, how's it working for us? How's it working just standing around saying he's awful, we shouldn't have any, you know, just holding the line has not gotten us anywhere. And I'm not going to argue with the approach of the people from South Korea because they got more on the line than we do. So if they think this, and listen, the truth is South Koreans weren't exactly pleased with the solution either, but, or this Olympic I don't even know if I want to call it a solution, this Olympic moment. A lot of them were very upset under about that. But like, if the people, you know, within spitting distance of this guy's nuclear weapons were willing to try this, then I'm sure as hell willing to support them in trying it.
I would like to see more progress towards bringing that regime down than progress towards legitimizing that regime. And we're not making any progress in that at all. We're stuck at a 1950s containment policy because, frankly, no one is willing to be imaginative and say, okay, how can we begin putting together a plan in place, a reasonable plan in place, that that leads to that regime collapsing from within? Essentially the Reagan Doctrine from the early 1980s. Which was largely responsible for helping the people of Eastern Europe get their countries back from the communist regime imposed upon them. I would like to see at least some effort in that direction. It's got to be more creative because, again, the regime in North Korea is far worse now that it treats their own people. And I'm not expecting something overnight. But I am expecting, I would like to see, and I don't see it out of this administration, I didn't see it out of previous administrations either, I'd like to see someone saying, look, our end game is a Korea that is free, that is democratic, and that is whole. And our end game is a China that is free and democratic. And we are going to take steps to ensure that happens. That's what I want to see. I haven't seen it in over 20 years.
I thought this was the fun segment of the show.
We'll get to the fun segment. The fun segment is...
And then I opened my mouth and I ruined it.
Geopolitics and fun with TJ take on different definitions than with the rest of us. But if, you know, since we are talking about the Olympics, and if we put on our shiny glasses for a moment, if you were going to do an Olympic sport, if you were going to attempt one, what would it be? And I'm going to start with Greg, because he's been the most polite tonight.
Yeah, I've had the flu, so I apologize to all my loyal fans who are like, I tune in just for Greg. Does it have to be winter or summer?
Winter. We're doing winter games only here, Greg.
For sure, winter.
You know, it used
and this
to
doesn't
be,
have I to always, have any basis in your physical reality.
I was going to say, because it used to be, I used to always want to do... ski jump, but then I watched that Worldwide of Sports thing, and then I realized
the agony of defeat.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And then for a long time I was like, yeah, you know, bobsled would be just awesome because it's got to be just like. And then I saw those like people. I heard about like you could actually die in one of those things. I mean, that's like horrible. And then I found out curling. It's like a lot of fun. My mother-in-law was a champion curler in her teens. So if I could do one, curling. That's where all the cool
curling.
Kids. I get a broom.
I watch curling. I will watch it for hours. I don't know anything about curling. I'm like, yeah, throw that
rock. Oh, my gosh.
Rock.
I can tell
Sweep
you all about curling.
Ice. I don't know what you're doing, but you do
you're,
that.
You're either speeding it up awesome. Or you're slowing it down. I can tell you all about curling. That's my thing. What about
I don't even
y'all?
Want to know at this point. I like so curling being kind of a divine mystery.
Oh, it's awesome.
So DJ, what about you? What's your sport of choice?
I was when I was a kid, I was fascinated by the luge. I thought it looked like going down in the sled when I was a kid. Granted, it's much more dangerous and I probably wouldn't last 5 minutes in the track before breaking every single bone in my body. Yeah. But I would probably have to. I probably
it would be the best last
one.
2 minutes of your life.
That's right.
Sarah, what about you?
What about you, Sarah?
In a violation of my pledge to the anti-patriarchy, I would definitely say figure skating.
Well done.
I love it. I love it so much. I love everything about it. I'm ready to. I just saw Tanya. I'm ready to avenge her legacy in whatever avenue is available to me. So I'm definitely going figure skating. And also that shit doesn't get enough respect. Those people are taking their toes over their foreheads on teeny tiny blades of metal on ice.
Figure skating's hard. I did it when I was a kid. And it's hard. I can't do any of the stuff that they do. For me, if being Johnny Weir was an Olympic sport, I would like to do that. I want to be Johnny Weir. I want to wear my hair in like a crazy poof and put on awesome makeup and be incredibly smart about figure skating. But that not being a sport, I gotta say I love like luge and skeleton and all those sports where they're just going breakneck down a hill. Yeah, that looks so crazy fun to me. you know, but I'm 44 and, you know, I think about how much my joints would hurt, how it would dry out my contacts to have the air in my face like that. But man, that looks like it would just be such a great ride to do that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Let's go fast. Let's go fast in the cold.
Let's go fast.
Fast in the cold. Because it is cold there. I mean, did you hear that, like, some of the skiers, the base level of their skis are getting so torn up by the ice on the slopes that they're having to have them replaced, and they're going to need new skis before all the events are over. I mean, it's really nuts. There's always some major technical difficulty at the Olympics that you just haven't anticipated before.
Maybe they should start doing these Winter Olympics, like, you know, in the summer.
That's definitely the answer, Greg. You figured it out.
All right, with that in mind, I'd like to thank Sarah, who, Sarah, can you, do you have a website besides your, plug, Sarah.
plug, let me plug away. Thanks for having me. Again, I'm the co-host of Pantsuit Politics. We have, two shows a week. You can find us at pantsuitpoliticsshow.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, at Pantsuit Politic, and Instagram. We also have a new podcast called The Nuanced Life, where we talk about life outside politics and some of the areas where we need to find some nuance in parenting and marriage, friendship, stress. We've got a new segment on that show called The Bruxism Beat, because I'm obsessed with the epidemic of teeth clenching in our society. So if you're as passionate about this as I am, which most people are not, but... I'm just saying, you'd be surprised how many people clench and grind their teeth at night.
Oh my god, I've got such terrible TMJ problems.
See?
See? I hear what you're saying.
See what I'm saying here? It's an epidemic.
I had to have special retainers made.
Please, join us on the Nuanced Life for the Bruxism Beat. We just did a great episode on it.
I can cross-promote it. And you can talk about Bruxism in the aftermath of Invisalign. I've got specialized knowledge, baby.
Listen. It's a situation, y'all. And so The Nuanced Life is also on Instagram at The Nuanced Life and Twitter at The Nuanced Life and Facebook. So you can find us all the places.
You do have all the places.
There you go.
And thank you for listening.
We need an Instagram account, y'all.
I know. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast and at Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And I swear we are going to have an Instagram, because that's what all the cool kids do. And share our link at your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well, like the Pantsuit Politics people. And if you'd like to join us in political debate between shows, join us in our Facebook group, Open Fire Politics. We're there and we'd love to see you there too. Anything else to leave us?
I think on our Instagram account, we should have, you know, lots of pictures of what we drink while we're making the show.